Okay, the verse up there, probably many of you have seen that, maybe memorized it. Men of Issachar, 1 Chronicles 12:32. And the rest of that verse says, who understood the times and knew what Israel should do. Okay, now when Dave and Tom invited me to come down, I thought, well, it's a real privilege. I don't know why they would invite me, but I do anything to be around those guys, so I said, I'll do it. And then it dawned on me I had to come up with something, you know. So if you've ever done something like this, that's where the pressure starts. But I felt like that you are men of Issachar, that this group of men and the men that you represent and you are investing in or have invested in you are truly men of Issachar. You understand the times. You know what's going on. You got your heads screwed on right. And you knew what Israel should do. Now, I've kind of read through that passages around that, and Israel never responded. And that's kind of true, isn't it? You know, you get a group of people that understand the times. Issachar was a tribe of Israel, one of the 12 tribes. By the way, is there a Bible around? I really came prepared here. You don't mind me taking a Bible? Okay, so what I thought we'd do with I have three times with you is develop a timeline. Okay, so how is God, if we understand the times, it helps if we understand what went before. So I'm going to go back just real briefly tonight, and it isn't a history lesson, it's probably not real tremendously accurate, it's kind of a shot at history. But beginning at 1730, when George Whitefield and Jonathan Edwards came from England, they brought what used to be called an awakening or a revival. But really, when God works, he works in the circumstances of life as it's going on. He doesn't kind of float over and then just drop. He works within what's going on in the culture. He's very much a part of our life. And so he enters. So when Issachar were men who understood the times, that's really important part to allow God to work or to see what God's doing. If we understand the times, that's where he's going to work and how he's going to work. So that's an important distinction there. There was a revival or an awakening. They call it the first great awakening, beginning in 1730 and lasted for about 20 years. And Whitefield and Edwards, and I think the reason they were so successful, they could talk real loud because they had no, you know, way of amplifying voices, and they get these great crowds, and they preach the gospel and so forth. And historians say out of that came our Constitution and our Republic. The revival that happened in the culture, the values that were laid down. Now, I'm not sure we're a Christian nation by, you know, you hear that, well, we're founded by Christians. Not necessarily, but there were values that were stimulated during that particular period of time. Okay, then a little bit later, 1730 through about 1840, there was another great awakening. And the result of that was kind of the increase of a couple of major denominations church-wise, the Methodists and the Baptists. So evidently there was a time where the people were prepared and God brought messengers. And a lot of that didn't happen through two men with big voices. It happened through smaller groups. And if you've ever heard of camp meetings, that was something that came out of that. People would go off for a couple weeks together and preach at each other. And so there's a great awakening during that period. And then the third one was 1850 through about 1900. And that encompassed the Civil War. That was during that period. And then also what we call the Gilded Age. And that's when corporations were rising in the American culture. And great, great, great wealth. That's why it's called gilded. You know, it's just people with tremendous wealth. But on the other end of the scale was people in tremendous poverty in our nation. So some of that was addressed through that. But out of that came a visionary called D.L. Moody. You probably heard of Moody Bible Institute and that type of thing. Well, the contribution Moody make that we'll take off on is that usually those revivals or those awakenings ended up in social movements. So like, I got them written down here, but things that kind of impacted the social fabric. But Moody had a vision that we ought to, people come out of those awakening, desiring to grow. Why don't we develop the people that come out of that? Why don't we equip them to take the awakening to more people? So he was kind of a visionary of what we would call a discipling momentum. Now, he died in 1890, I think the last year of the 1800s. So he planted that seed, and some seminaries, like Dallas Seminary, came out of that vision that we're going to equip laymen as well as develop people in their spiritual walk. And you can understand that. Okay, now the last one, and we'll get into that in a little more detail, is about 1960 through 1980. And I call that the Great Reaping. The circumstances were right for people to be reaped. Okay, what were some of the circumstances? Well, everybody went to church. When I was growing up, I grew up in the 40s, late 40s and the 50s. And all the characters, as you see, Happy Days and all that, that's kind of all basically true. It's just kind of a peaceful time. Everybody was prospering. But excuse me, I need a water. I think that's mine, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, that's mine. Thank you. So it was a time of great prosperity in the American thing, and everybody went to church. In fact, as I grew up, there were a couple of families in the town where I grew up that didn't go to church. And we wondered what they did on Sunday. Did they eat babies? Or, I mean, what's the result of that? Because it was so, in fact, 1960 is marked as the year of the highest church attendance in American, you know, statistics. Excuse me. Okay. Okay, so that kind of puts us on a little timeline shot here. So here's the first three, a gap, and then we get to 1960. And that's when I was growing up. When I was growing up, kind of the community raised us. If you guys are the age, and I won't point you out, but some of you are, but you probably remember that. Nobody had a great parenting plan. We were just thrown out into the community, and everybody knew everybody's business. So everybody had the right to discipline me as neighbors, and we got into trouble, and then they'd call home, or my dad would be down drinking with the cop, and he'd tell him about, you know, I was out racing, and he didn't give me a ticket, but you got to get your boy under control. That type of thing was going on. Well, eventually I finished high school and went on to college. And about halfway through my time in college, I got engaged. And Nancy, and we were going to get married, and white picket fence and the whole works. That was kind of what you did. So she came down to, there was a weekend of parties and dances. And I went to the airport to pick her up and shared with her as we were going back to campus the wonderful weekend I had planned with my future wife, you know. And she interrupted me partway through, and she said she wasn't real happy with the plans that I was telling her about. So we got in a little discussion, and I'm sure I didn't do well in that discussion, but she said, in the process of that discussion, she said, I've become a Christian. And I had no idea what she was talking about. Literally, I didn't. Even though we all went to church, there was no communication of the gospel in the environment that I was in. So she said she had become a Christian. So, well, that kind of ruined the weekend. And so I took her back to the airport, and on the way back to campus, I thought, well, I'm an engineer. I ought to go figure this out. So I went back and found a guy in the dorm named Carl and asked him if we could talk about something. And well, he was graduating senior, taking early exams, and he didn't have time to talk. So he said, well, next weekend I'll have some time, and I'll come by your room. So I had a week to try to piece together what happened. You know, the rug had been pulled out from under me. So Carl came by my room the next weekend, and he said, what's up? And I said, well, I kind of want to know what happened to Nancy. She says she's become a Christian, and she broke our engagement, gave me back my ring. And he said, well, I don't know what happened there, but I can tell you what she happened to her if she became a Christian. So he very simply shared with me the story you all know, and I'll share it again. Romans 3:23, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Now, Virginia Tech was all men's school at that time. So I'd lived in the dorm, you know, for a couple years now. So all have sinned was kind of, yeah, sure, I know that. I mean, we're all kind of mess. And then he said that the wages of sin was death, that we were separated from God, and did not have a relationship with him because of the things we'd done wrong. But the good news was that Jesus died on the cross to pay the penalty for that sin and restore that relationship with God. Well, yeah, that made sense. Well, then he quoted a verse out of another book of the Bible where Jesus was standing at the door of my life knocking. He says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. This is Jesus talking to me, as Carl explained it. If any man will hear my voice and open the door, I'll come into him and live with him, and he with me. And so he stopped there and he said, would you like to have Jesus in your life? So now that's a pretty short presentation of the gospel. That's about what happened in that afternoon in my dorm room, as I remember it. So I said, yeah, I'd like to. So he prayed something, I don't remember what, and then he said, well, your turn to pray. And I just did what Jesus said. I asked him into my life. And so now I was working in the dining hall at that point, and I had to run down to work. So I asked Carl to lock up the room, and I headed out. And so that was the end of, you know, that. But over the next few days and weeks, I could see that there were real changes going on in my life. One is I quit cussing, and that was kind of something that probably I should have quit anyway, but it just happened. And another thing was that there were some moral issues that I was dealing with in my life, and I think that's the thing that helped me see that I was separated from God, because I know those things bothered me. And but it seemed to clear up somehow. There was victory there. I use the word victory now. I didn't know that then. But there was a freedom that happened in my life. And then my relationships with the guys were less adversarial. I noticed that, hey, I kind of got along with these guys. So there were internal changes that were real enough to me to let me know that that something's happened here that's real. So I finished that term and went off to work in Pennsylvania, and then came back the next term and ran into a group of guys that met on Friday nights in the student center. And they were all called themselves Christians. So this is my first, we call it community now, but we'd get together on Friday night and kind of talk about stuff, maybe do a little study, something like that, have a speaker. And it was kind of amazing to me. There's about 10 or 15 of us, so it wasn't a big deal. And that was probably the major thing going on campus in that at that time in that regard. So we went on. And then my senior year, the Navigators, some of you know of that group, they sent a couple of college-age guys to the campus to develop a Navigator ministry. And so they came to that Friday night meeting and kind of talked, you know, we got to know them that way. And they seemed to know what they were doing. That was kind of different. It wasn't just a bunch of us trying to help each other. It's kind of like the kids now, they raise each other down in the mall, you know. But it's they seemed to know what they were doing, but they were fun guys. They were good guys. So, but one of the guys, Johnny, he began coming by my room occasionally. And he talked to me about memorizing scripture. You probably guessed that, navigators. And then he talked to me about having a daily time with Christ. He called it a quiet time. So I began doing that. So he kind of nurtured me through those things. And that was kind of where I'd gotten to. Well, then I graduated and got a job in Washington, D.C. Now, I finished in 63 from an engineering school. In 61, remember what Jack Kennedy stood before the world and said we're going to do in the 60s? Moon and bring them back safely. And it was always tagged on at the end. So engineers were great demand. So I came out of school at exactly the right point. So you just pick your job where you want to be. And some of the guys would, the guys were coming to campus to recruit. So we were in Virginia, and some of the guys would take interviews in Los Angeles, and then they'd give them plane tickets. And then they'd take an interview the next day up in San Francisco, catch a shuttle up there, and then fly back and then cash in the empty plane tickets they didn't need. So they'd make $400 or $500 on a weekend just doing interviews. But that's what the market was then. And so I took a job in Washington, D.C. with Vitro Laboratories. Excuse me again, it's dry out here. And they were doing, they did research on missile systems. Just give me a minute. And the navigators were very active in the D.C. area at the time. So I got involved. So it was a really interesting job. I enjoyed it a lot, a big challenge. And you guys are intimidating. Okay, so where I was in my growth, I was starting to do some basic stuff that was helping me grow. Christ was real in me, and I knew that. And I had a couple of chances to share with others what had happened in my life. I wasn't very good at doing it, but in that process, people made commitments to Christ. There's a couple. But in that bunch that I was hanging around with when I wasn't working, in that bunch, they kept talking about investing in another man. They started talking, and they used the word multiplication. And that was kind of a new thing. I'm sure Johnny talked to me about that. But I was around, and I thought, well, I guess that's the next step. How's that going to happen? When is that? How do I do that? Who would want to get help from me? That type of thing. Questions you have when you first start. So I was challenged. I bought a, remember the Corvair Monzas? Unsafe at any speed? Mm-hmm. It was a sharp little car. You know, Ralph Nader wrote a book about them. They're so bad. But we all went down. One of the guys at my senior class went down and got a fleet discount at the Chevy dealer in Roanoke. So we had to buy 10 cars to get that discount. So he rounded up 10 of us. We went down there and picked out our car because everybody had jobs. So you just had to have a telegram offering a job, and then they'd defer the payments for a few months. So it was a nice thing. You know, you graduate, hey, I'm going to reward myself. So I bought a little Monza, a little four on the floor, and really enjoyed that. It was a good group of people there that were involved with the NAVs, and they were all trying to grow and help each other, and just a great environment. And then I was wondering how you get to that next step. What's this multiplication? What's this investing in another man? So at about that time, three things happened. The first was Steve. A guy came to Christ. He was a Navy guy. We're about the same age. He was new in the Navy, but he was an officer. And he had been led to Christ by a chaplain up in Boston and referred to, because he moved to, got reassigned to D.C. So they had said, is there somebody down there would meet with him? He's just starting to grow. So somehow I got hooked up with Steve. And I thought, okay, here we go. This is good stuff. And so I'd meet with Steve, and I just did what Johnny did with me. Helped him do scripture memory. you know, help him have a quiet time. And Steve didn't make all our meetings because he had secret stuff with the Navy, and I'll explain that later. But that was going on, and I really liked that. Okay, at Vitro, we were working on the Tartar missile, and that's a missile there. It was the Cold War, so we were going to do a report on the response time of the Tartar missile, because the Russians would send planes in at sea level, and the radar on the ship where the Tartar was mounted was 50 feet up. So you do the math. When's that going to come over the curvature of the Earth, the bear bomber? And the way they did that, their strategy at that point was, they called it over-the-shoulder toss. So they'd come in, and then they'd come off sea level, get all the G's going, open the bomb door, and let the thing fly. And they target Norfolk, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., and Philadelphia. So the Tartar missile had to be able to pick that up at a very short time, pick up the trajectory, and be able to shoot down the plane before the bomb came out of the bomb door. So that was the study we were doing. It was fairly intricate, and we'd go down and get the intel on the bear bomber, what it was capable of, because they're always upgrading. And then we go back and do the work. Now, what we were doing, though, was writing proposals to study that in depth. Well, at work, they came to me and they said, now, and I liked the writing part of it. So it was a work as a team, and put the proposal together and submit it to government. There were probably five other companies doing the same proposal. So the edge you had was the initials behind the guys that were going to do the work. We're actually going to do the study, not just propose the study. So the boss came to me and he said, what we'd like you to do is move to West Orange, New Jersey, and go to Rutgers and get a master's in operations research. That was the discipline that kind of entered into that stuff. And we'll pay the ticket and we'll give you time to get your master's. But that's what we'd like you to do. Okay, so now I'm meeting with Steve, and he's starting to go, and I really enjoyed that process. You know, I began to understand a little bit how addictive that is, that you're getting to see another guy grow, like I'm sure as Johnny met with me, he'd be excited, hey, Jay's actually doing the verses, and he's getting good stuff. So that was number two. The third thing that happened... So now I thought at Vitro that this was a nice option. Go think it over. If you'd like to take it, we'd really like you. Yeah, you got it. No, it wasn't. It was go home and pack. You know, this is your next step, and we'll start right now. So I realized that my nice post-college life, having this nice car, having these friends, being involved with people or doing things, my time with Steve, that I was going to have to leave all that, but I'd get a master's paid for. And so I was kind of juggling all the factors. You know, and at that time, where the draft fits in, that was a big factor for us guys. If you don't have a deferment, you better know why, because otherwise you're going to be on a submarine or something. So the third factor that happened at that same time, there was a conference in Colorado, and I'd never been west, so I signed up for this weekend conference in Colorado. And it was a bunch of men. There were probably 150, 200 men at a castle there, the Navigators' headquarters. We all sat on the floor. There weren't enough chairs, and sat on the floor, and they talked to us about multiplying, about investing your life in another man, and they have people get up and tell how that's helped them. So it was just stimulating that whole thing again. But the last night, Lauren Sanney, who was then president of Navigators, got up, and I figured he was going to do some... I'd never met him and never heard him. I thought he was going to get up and do some, you know, stem winder. We're going to jump out the windows of the castle, go take on the city or something like that. But he wasn't. He was a very soft-spoken man who shared some verses about investing your life in other people, about commitment to Christ and what that meant. And then he made a statement during that talk. He said, now, would you rather build men or missiles? I thought that, you know, and have you ever been in a meeting where, you know, like this, and somebody says something and you think everybody's looking at you because you know that it's pointed right at you? And that's just what I felt like. I'm sure I got embarrassed, got red. You know, it's like, and it seemed like out of context when he said it to me. Well, then at the end of his message, he was talking about the lordship of Christ. And so he's talking about, Luke 9:23, if any man come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily and follow me, and so forth. So then at the end of this talk, he said, any of you who have, no, he made it really clear, if you not made Christ the Lord of your life, not Savior, but Lord of your life, I'd like you to stand right now. While you're on the floor, kind of uncomfortable, and so getting up, I mean, it took some effort. And he led us in a prayer. And I realized I hadn't done that. I was trying to figure out what direction my life was going by whether I'd get out of the draft, would I get a master's, would I'd miss my friends, you know, all that. I was trying to juggle all the factors and come up with something that benefited me the most or was least costly to me. And I think that talk just clarified that whole thing out. And then his statement. So I look back on that time and I really feel like that was God's call to me that night, that statement, do you want to build men or missiles? And by standing, I said, give me men. So that's kind of where the track changed. And a couple months later, I ended up in the back seat of a car with the guy who was kind of heading up the NAV stuff in D.C. And he said, you know, have you ever thought about thinking of becoming a navigator staff guy? No, it's kind of unfair. You know, you're in the back seat, you can't get out, car's moving. So anyway, that kind of, I didn't necessarily feel that was a call. It was an invitation to think about it. And I knew I was going to have to change jobs because Vitro was done. Once I didn't say I want the master's, they said, well, we really can't go on that way. So that's, let me just see where I am here. So that's how I came to Christ and began to see that I could do that. I could share Christ with people. And at that time, as I've titled this, The Great Reaping, that's what was beginning to happen in the mid to late 60s. There was just a tremendous reaping on a campus, because that's where we focused. In say, 1959, might have been one or two kids come to Christ, you know, that we'd know of. Well, by the late 60s, there'd be 150, 200 kids. And that's when the Navigators and Campus Crusade and Young Life and all those organizations really grew, because the harvest was plentiful, and but the laborers were few. But God was honoring D.L. Moody. So in the 30s and the early 40s, God was raising up some new visionaries. And Dawson Trotman, R.G. Letourneau, Bill Bright. You know, these men were just kind of getting their feet on the ground, getting a vision for equipping men and equipping people to do the ministry. And so God was preparing the way, knew the times. He was preparing the times for when, and then the people were prepared. Everybody was churched. You know, and there was a great sort of dissatisfaction with life as it was going on among youth. So that was the hippie stuff, if you remember that. You know, kids were looking for something more than what their parents, because their parents were prosperous. I don't know whether you watched the series, not a great series, but it did portray a real truth or real actuality. Mad Men, I don't know whether any of you, probably most of you don't watch TV, right? Isn't that your first thing? Well, I don't watch much TV, you know. But Mad Men, it was kind of a picture of the early 60s, the values of our culture in an advertising agency. Okay, so the Fourth Awakening. So Christ becomes Lord, makes decisions a whole lot simpler. The call, do you want to build men or missiles? Okay, so what we want to look at, and we're going to quit at this point, is God was calling, was doing something during this period of time, and that's where my life, for those 20 years, was really focused on the ministry that we're in together, of discipling men. That's where we were learning and growing and figuring that out. But with visionaries, you need foot soldiers. So you can have a guy with a great vision, and he can proclaim it well, and maybe he's even developed some tools to make it possible to do. But without the foot soldiers, you're dead in the water. So a lot of us, and I met them later, some became staff, some didn't, but God said, I need foot soldiers. So that night at Glen Eyrie in the castle, when I stood up, I became a foot soldier. I didn't really know what I was doing, but he said, that doesn't matter. We'll work that out as we go. And that's when the great reaping, you know, it was all prepared. The people were prepared. And he just needed people to go out and do it. Just jump in. And so that's kind of where we ended that point. Let me see, make sure I haven't skipped something here that's important. So God raised up some visionaries. As we said, Trotman and those guys. And they were different then. They weren't welcomed. That's not where the church was. In fact, there was a book written during this time, toward the end of this time, when these tremendous things were happening, and where my world was campus. And so the thing we did is we just went out and did what Carl did with me. We just preached the gospel any way we could, because people were prepared. It was, you know, and we were welcomed. It wasn't the church and state separated and all the stuff that went on later during that period of time. The reaction back was fairly strong, but before that reaction back had an effect, there was a tremendous ministry of reaping. In fact, I heard once that half the guys that went to Dallas Seminary over the next 20 years were reached during that 10-15 year period. You know, in campus and type environments. So, the great reaping. Okay, let's stop it there. So what we want to do is, so you see where we've come from. God does something. Men of Issachar who understood the times. Okay, well these men were agents of a time when God did something special. And then I got to live through that time. And maybe some of you did too. It'd be good to hear your stories. Where you saw that great reaping happening in your very presence. No, you know, so that's, I put 1960 here. Okay, now we're here at 2021. And the question that I want to stimulate during this time is, what is God doing? Who understood the times? Because you guys understand the times, but we want to continue to ask ourselves that question. And to stimulate each other. What do you think's happening? What might be? Now, an obvious one is what? It's happening during this time. Think of 2020. What's that?
Corona.
Okay, COVID. Yeah, okay. Oh, excuse me, I didn't. You wanted a corona. I don't know. No. Okay, yeah, COVID. Obviously, there's going to be an impact. There already is, but there's going to be, every single person on earth has been affected by it. So what has that done? What has that done? What's that? Well, there could be. And how do we do that? So we want to kind of take some time tomorrow morning and talk a little bit about the process in between and what some men that study this stuff have found, but then also talk to each other about that. What do you see? Because it's going to come out of your lives. You know, men of Issachar who understood the times, not the Council of Jerusalem, are going to tell you. You're going to see, well, this is happening. The people I know need this. And how is God going to use that? And how is he going to use us? So you are Metavisikar. You understand the times. You don't understand how effective your ministry is because you don't see it from the outside. But I come as one who's been involved in ministry for more than I like to think about. But what you guys are doing and how you're doing it is so, so significant. This is no small thing. So you know, understanding the times is going to come out of what you guys understand and what you see and how you feel and what God's doing through your life and in your life. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why I said, okay, I don't like flying planes. I'll come down. And thank you for the honor of inviting me. But the one thing I want to communicate is that you are in a unique situation. Very unique. Not only in CBMC, and I know you don't use those initials, you probably don't know what they are, but in other stuff that's going on, you're raising up multiplying laborers for the kingdom. Now, if you go and you implement, and not to downplay the church, but the church raises up, does men's programs, and raises up men to help lead the church. So, and that's good. Because we need to sustain that. But do you understand how difficult and how more significant it is to raise up laborers, you understand that word, for the kingdom? It's so, so significant. So I just want to make sure I want to look each of you in the eye as I say it. Laborers for the kingdom in a sustainable way. It's amazing. It's amazing. So, thank you, Lord, for these men, for each one that's here at his stage of growth. Thank you, Lord, that you can use us to reach out to men and women and children. You've given us that commission and you want us to do it, but also thank you that you've given us a heart. As Dwight Moody said way back then in 1895, we need to build our people. We need to build people. And then thank you for those men like Dawson and Bill Bright and others, many others, who came along who had a vision of how to do that and were willing to fight the odds and fight the forces that didn't want them to do that and felt they weren't qualified, they weren't trained right or something. So thank you that those men came along. And now, Lord, we're at another point. We've come through a tremendous earth-shaking set of circumstances, and deeply want to understand the times that you have us in right now. And most of us that stood up as foot soldiers, Lord, as you know, are on our walk home. We responded. Now you're asking the next generations to continue the walk. So, Lord, I pray that we would come away from this time, this weekend, loving you more, loving each other more, but also with a sense that you want to do something special and that this is a special group of men that you've raised up that can make a tremendous difference in terms of the world. So we thank you for that potential in Jesus' name. Amen. Good. Yeah, is there any questions? Yeah, sir. Yeah, and we can do questions. Let's not do that now. We need dessert, right? Yeah, dessert. And he wants a Corona.
Yes, that's also true.
I think
we
have a question here.
Okay.
What happened to the girl?
Oh, I have that in here. I should have. Okay, so I was wondering, maybe I got dumped. You wonder, you know? So I called her and told her, I've become a Christian. And truthfully, when I received Christ, she wasn't in the conversation. And that's a miracle, you know. But I called her because I thought, hey, we can get back together again. And this is good. Well, she didn't want to talk. So the next weekend, I sold a couple of textbooks I shouldn't have sold. Get gas for my car and went up to Pittsburgh. And she didn't want to talk. She didn't want to. So I got dumped, essentially.
gave it a good try. We gave it the best shot.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Well, I got the best end of the deal, because we'd have had two kids and a divorce, you know.
I was thinking about when you were talking about Jason mentioned the pandemic, you know, COVID and what's been going on. But when you were talking about the times that we're in, you know, that's been something that I've been in a couple of different services where that was a topic. And I'm just, you know, the whole thing that I got out of it was, you know, what used to be right is now wrong, and how, you know, things have changed with culture, and just what, you know, and normally it's from somebody who's lived through some other, like my pastor, he's really concerned, you know, it's a topic that he shares about all the time, and it, you know, it just got me kind of thinking about it, because I'm 43, and you know, you go along, you get along, you know. It seems like from other generations, when they point things out, I realize how messed up some of the things are.
Now?
Yeah, now.
Yeah.
But it seems like what used to be right is now wrong. And everything's kind of like backwards, you know, from...
Yeah.
Values.
Yeah, I put a little to respond to what you're saying. I have this little red thing over here on the side. Just as you think of something like you've mentioned there, we could put COVID up here. If I wrote it, you couldn't read it. But COVID would be one thing. So what are we seeing from your... Because it's going to come out of your vantage point. This isn't something that's going to be dropped down from the sky. And we'll begin to see patterns and trends, because tremendous need in our culture is obvious, right?
Right.
The moral so now that's deeply hurt people.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The other thing I was thinking about is that we're now into another president. We've got another regime coming in. We've come out of a forceful type of, you know, figure and lying and all this, and now people are like, you know, what gives, right? So I think
deeply divided.
Deeply divided.
So that would be something, maybe somebody, you can read your handwriting.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of people that are unchurched now, just have no idea what the Bible even says.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the problem is too, the church in itself is not speaking the truth. So it's very low, and unicorns, and everything's cool, and follow God, it's going to be easy and rich, and, you know, you can get on Facebook right now, and they're advertising to show up at conferences to learn how to do prophetic worship and teach. So you can sign up for $11 now to become a prophetic teacher of the gospel, and you hear people.
Yeah.
From Facebook, you click on it.
Okay, so on that, one of the things we might write up there is the...
social media.
Yeah, and I call it the, it begins with a V. What's the word?
V.
You know, the whole internet's a, it's a...
Vile.
What?
Vile? No. Viral. Viral.
Everything's gone viral?
Right, yeah, it's a viral world. It's a two-dimensional world.
Web.
Yeah, web. So, yeah, that's... Yeah, so... Yeah, so we'll just try to say what are the things, because back in the 60s, what's that?
Oh, the
yeah, he's going to take over in a minute. Yeah, I know.
He's helping me.
Yeah.
That V you were talking about, that V word you were trying to say, Bosniak. That's what
it is. Okay. Well, we'll stir this a little more. I think if... Just to summarize a little bit, I want to make sure I'm clear that it's going to come through you men. You know, the changes are going to happen. You know, you think of a guy like Dawson Trump, and I know some of his history because I was a navigator. So you get a lot of it, and it's good. But he was just worked at a lumber yard and had a heart for God, memorized a few verses, and came to Christ. You know, it's just very simple. But out of him and a heart that loved God came a movement. There's 6,000 people around the world that are navigators doing what we are committed to do. And they've kept the vision, kept it very well. You know, the organization's gotten old, and there's problems always in every organization. But, you know, out of one guy, and that's how it happens, isn't it? Mm-hmm. God sends a man, he has a vision, and then some people say, I'll be a foot soldier. And you guys are foot soldiers, you know. Can't make it any better now. Can't make it any worse. About as low as it goes, a foot soldier, right? 4 years in the Navy in a submarine. I'm out of here, you know. I'm a foot soldier for Uncle Sam. So, good. What do we do to get our dessert?
Just go in there. And get okay. And they have some cookies for those that don't take the alcohol. It's a little bit long.
Is this yours?
No,
this was yours? Okay.
Dessert.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So dessert and fellowship following up here, but tomorrow morning, kind of whenever you wake up till 6:45, you can hang out, drink coffee, talk with people, have a quiet time, whatever you want to do until 6:45. Breakfast is at 7, so if you want to sleep all the way to 7.
There's dessert, so you better get in there before the ice cream comes. Grab your
popcorn. Really enjoying it.
Well, good, good, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's get our dessert. Okay, man. Thanks for staying awake. You're crazy, man.
Why?
Well, no, I appreciate it.
Like a north and south thing. Because I grew up in the church, but I grew up Catholic. And, you know, I never heard of the navigators. I never heard of any of that. They weren't active on campus. I was.
How old are you? They weren't.
Well, no, this was in 78. 78 is when I went to college.
Okay.
Now, FCA, but FCA was like, you know, you can join that. I mean, it was just something you could have a name in there on the yearbook if you were a member of that, but nobody ever came around. So it was interesting. So all that, where was Tanny and Bright, where were they all from? And this lumber guy, were they from?
Southern California.
Oh,
that's where they fused with each other. They challenged each other. Yeah, there was a group of them kind of came out of that, which is necessary. They fooled each other. In fact, Bill Bright's first night in L.A. as a non-Christian, he was a candy packager.
Okay.
So he moved to L.A. to bigger market. And his first night, he spent in a navigator home, probably his home.
Really?
You know, he's hitchhiking, like you did back then.
Yeah. So how did Troutman know, or how did it just came together that way?
Well, just over time. It was a hotbed. They'd be at each other's thing or hear about that. In fact, I meant to share Billy Graham. In 1949, he had his first big crusade in L.A. Supposed to go 3 weeks, and went like 8 weeks. That was a big change. Well, he realized from that what he was doing was stopping at the meetings. People were coming forward. So then he went to Troutman and said, would you help me? And Troutman said, I've got my own thing. And he says, well, you're the only one I know that does that. So that was, they began to get reputations, I think, what I'm saying.
Okay.
This guy's focused. He's seeing results.
But how did the navigators, I mean, why were they in Virginia? Why didn't they come to West Virginia? Well, it was a time, so that's what you're trying to tell us, is that
I think strategically we understood that an ag engineering school was probably a better place to go than Harvard or...
Yeah.
More receptive.
Yeah.
Kids closer to the soil.
Yeah.
So if we're going to reap. And also the way, and I'll share that tomorrow morning, but the way I went out as a staff guy is we went to campus, we didn't know anybody in the city, newly married, very little money, start a ministry. And after 3 years, if you're still here, we'll talk to you about being a staff guy. So it's kind of like sink or swim. Because we were just so foot sore. We stood up and said,
We didn't know what we were doing.
But those 3 years, I figured out pretty quick. About the second day, we figured out what to do. Well, thank you,
Georgia. Thank you.
Ukraine, man.
Yes.
Spent some time in the Ukraine.
Did you?
Yeah, with the commission.
Yes.
Remember the commission? The school teachers and principals.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, we're talking about great men here, but you didn't mention Billy Graham and other evangelists.
We're just talking about okay. I'll try to bring that back up.
Why is it? I would be tomorrow, so you can just bring it.
Oh, okay.
Is it different?
No, we were just talking about, he said, how did these guys get together, Bill Graham?
Yeah.
Robbins. Well, they were all in Southern California.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Billy went to L.A. with a crusade in 1949.
Uh-huh.
And he went for 3 weeks, because he was kind of a small
guy. Yes, I remember that. Uh-huh.
Okay, but he stayed 8 weeks. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but at that time, well, then he realized that he needed help.
Mm-hmm.
So God was allowing him to read. Part of this thing is starting to happen. But they weren't helping people. They realized the back end of the truck, everything was falling off. So he went to Trotman.
Okay.
And he said, could you help me follow up the people that come forward to crusade? Trotman said, no, I got my own thing. So that's where the mix, he said, well, you're the only one I know that's doing it effectively. I'm doing it effectively,
mm-hmm.
of helping people grow effectively.
Mm-hmm. So
that they had reputations that were starting to, if you want somebody to do that, go see him. If you want.
Mm-hmm.
So they began to mix.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all together in that area, which mm-hmm. made it possible. They didn't have to mm-hmm. fly across the country.
So it's more like what the evangelist did is more calling for people, but you were talking more about those who built the...
Right, yeah. Trump was investing in people, you know, like these guys, like you guys. And, so his... nobody was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the castle in Colorado. That came with Billy Graham, had taken an option on to buy that land. There's a castle in Colorado, in this pristine, beautiful place. And Billy was going to make a businessman's retreat out of it.
We're going to do what?
Make a businessman's retreat out of it.
Okay.
Because he had a lot of businessmen who were interested in what he was doing, so he got them together. And, but people counseled him. They said, no, you're an evangelist, not a conference speaker.
Okay.
So he went to Trotman and he said, would you pick up my option on that property? And Trotman just had, under 50 people. It's a huge place. It's kind of, So that was a link.
When it happened?
That's the question.
When it happened?
Huh?
When it happened?
50.
In the 50s?
Yeah. I think they, 53, I think they bought it.
Okay.
Barely.
And now it's still owned?
Yeah, that's their big conference, Navigators headquarters. They built buildings.
Navigators headquarters in North Carolina, right?
No.
Where is it?
No, this is in Colorado Springs.
It's Colorado.
Yeah. Have you been there before?
Yeah, I've been to Colorado, but not Springs. I've been to Colorado Boulder.
Okay.
I've been to Colorado Boulder.
That's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
So, but I've heard a lot about Springs, so I want to go there or something.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, man. Thank you. Yeah.
so much. We COVID and in the oil waters, the fifth business is kind of carrying us.
Thought it was a little thing, but I'm like, wow, thanks, guy. That's it's a way different person than, you know, I'm sorry, you know, whatever I did, you know.
Instead of getting the gun out of you.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you know something must have happened, right? It's the only way you really know it.
So, it's pretty great time. So I'm very thankful to be here and part of this group. And
it's great having you. You're a blessing to us.
Oh, thank you.
Good to have Jim Donnelly in your corner too.
Oh yeah. So he was. That's what we talked about. He was right there, right in the middle of it.
He's lived it too.
And I can understand it now because he says, man, that guy, when I first started talking to him, it was just a fog and a mess.
I haven't grown to the foxhole. Everybody's been around my foxhole. Then all of a sudden, it seems like you go back and stop pulling out again. It's kind of looking good.
It's interesting you say that, because I was thinking about in there, there were some things that were very applicable to me, you know, he was talking about, and I find I have to kind of moderate myself, because I get all into it, you know, and I'm studying the Bible 5 times a day, and, you know, meditating and everything, and then I'm solid for about a week, and then I realize all of a sudden it's been a few days, and I kind of like take a break, and I'm like, well, I got to get back to it, you know. So it's kind of like trying to, you know, not peaks and valleys, just.
It's good you got
old
Donnelly. You can just hang on Donnelly. He's good.
Absolutely. He's certainly been a great year. Peace.
That's been a lot of years. Jim, he was like where you were.
Oh, okay.
Jim was from NASA one time.
He's come through a lot. You know, it's kind of, these guys have been in the valley. Business and everything else, and their lives are normalized. I've been in the war, and they're not afraid to talk about it. So this is the reality. A lot of places are really not going to get much reality.
Definitely not much transparency.
Yeah, that's what I really appreciate, is being around other men that you can, you know, and you could say, I ain't figured it out, but it's at least it's looking better, and I feel like I'm figuring it out a little bit more week by week. So, and like you said, you know, I think I made 2 steps forward, and I'm pretty sure I took 1 step back.
Well, the nice thing is, I got guys that won't judge me when I really screw up.
Yeah.
They just come alongside and say, want to try a different way?
Well, it's, and I think it's also, it gives you a lot of reason not to screw up. I think, I mean, beyond, you know, just God himself, like you say, hey, I don't want to screw up because I don't want to let them down, you know, because certainly I've had my screw ups, and I just, Jim's like my confession, you know, like, say, I really screwed up.
And you notice how this is kind of a conventional service for them. I've heard their swim state, that's what we have for them.
And I guess it's nice to, there's hope for any of us.
I mean, 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, I was living in a guy who discipled me because my wife had kicked me out.
Oh, wow.
So, unfortunately, we've been able to come back together.
Oh, great.
But for 4.5 months, I was living at his house.
Oh, wow.
So, unfortunately, you know, when I was kicked out, he says, you need a place to stay? And then he gave me a room.
Who was this? I'm not familiar with him.
Jay Baker.
Oh, Jay.
The guy who sang for me.
Yeah.
And after being married for over 30 years, my wife kicked me out. And fortunately, we went through counseling and we got back together. She had another man and just a mess. Sometimes life gets really, really messy.
Yeah. No doubt. So,
having good guys around you.
Yeah, and it's, I think probably y'all certainly done this a lot, but I even see, like, around me in a very short period of time, I have people that I used to run with, you know, who were certainly on the wrong side of things, who are getting more interested and, you know, are starting to come around, so that's kind of fun.
Just
to, yeah, it's just fun to see people that, you know, are as big a hot messes and, you know, party animals as I was, and say, you know, I think you can just look, you know, like people here, even though you had a lot of problems, be like, man, it looked like they're at peace. This doesn't, you know, this doesn't over here look quite as attractive anymore, which is like what I saw in Jim. It's like, you know, he's been through a lot to the, it seems like more fun. or less stressful. Maybe not the easy. Maybe not the easy path, though. But
no peace is really a terrible place to be. We're all hopeless.
Yeah.
I was laboring toward that, and everything just came out. And I couldn't even know how to tell you this. I didn't even know what I was doing.
That's for me. You know, I realized, like, the people in my marriage, I was like, my problem was, you know, I cared about this.